Welcome to Conversations.
I'm Hyman Gluestein.
And I am Patrick Beinart. And this is a program of attitudes, opinions, and identity. On Conversations today, we have something special which involves two Canadians. The first person we'll be talking about is a man who was born in the eastern townships of Quebec in 1866, Reginald Fessenden, the father of modern radio. You've probably never heard his name, so we'll try to acquaint you with him.
And the second person we focus on today is Dr. Jack Belrose of Ottawa's Communications Research Center. We'll talk to him because he's one of the world's experts on Fessenden and can give us the true story of the medium that we're using to talk to you today, radio.
So who is Reginald Fessenden? Well, he's a kind of difficult guy for us 21st century types to get a hold on. He was the son of an Anglican priest, and his middle name was Aubrey. That's right, Reginald Aubrey Fessenden. His formative years were all before 1900, making him one of those great inventors and tinkerers with more familiar names like Edison, Bell, and Westinghouse.
Reginald Fessenden was a tall, cigar-smoking, gruff, but also a jovial man. He was a professor of electrical engineering at Purdue and at the University of Pittsburgh, yet he never got a university degree. In 1890, people learned engineering as a hands-on trade, not in an ivory tower.
When the young Canadian first worked for Thomas Edison, Reginald Fessenden wrote, "Do not know anything about electricity, but can learn pretty quick." And indeed he did, virtually teaching himself all about electrical wave theory during his early 20s in Edison's New Jersey lab.
Later, when Fessenden left the University of Pittsburgh in 1900, he started communications research, what we now know as radio, for the U.S. Weather Bureau. This quickly led to the Canadian inventor joining two Pittsburgh businessmen to build a radio transmission tower at Brant Rock, Massachusetts, across from Cape Cod. Ham radio operators of today recreated Fessenden's pioneering broadcasts.
The single most important broadcast from Brant Rock, Massachusetts, was on December 24, 1906, Christmas Eve. It was a sound wave transmission of the human voice and music to ships at sea. And the Fessenden amateurs say it sounded something like this.
Calling CQ to all ships. This is station BO, Bravo Ocean, at Brant Rock. Listen, you are about to hear a special transmission for Christmas Eve.
That was a phonograph recording of Handel's Largo. We will now have a solo sung by one of our engineers, Mr. Stein, accompanied by me on the violin.
I must apologize, as it appears that Mr. Stein will be unable to perform for us this evening, so those of you who are listening to this transmission will have to be content with a violin solo by Reginald Fessenden.
Inspiring words from the Bible, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men of goodwill."
Fessenden's broadcast was joyously received on ships across the Atlantic. It was the first time radio was used to transmit voice and music, radio as we now know it. Today on Conversations, we have Dr. Jack Belrose of Ottawa as our guest. Patrick and I met Jack Belrose at his home in the Gatineau area of Quebec.
Belrose is a fascinating man himself because he has a true story to tell, a story that people even today will not accept. Why? Because Marconi is almost universally described as the sole originator of radio. But this version of the facts is wrong.
The Canadian and British governments ignored Fessenden's pioneering achievements in 1906 and after, because they were funding Marconi's Morse code efforts at transoceanic transmission. At the same time, American industrialists pirated Fessenden's devices.
But in 1928, a United States court ruled that Fessenden should receive $2.5 million in damages from the Radio Corporation of America, RCA, and the court declared Fessenden the father of radio.
When we talked to Jack Belrose, we wanted him to take us back through the real progression of events. And Patrick asked to be taken back to Brant Rock and nearby Plymouth in the crucial year of 1906. We wanted to get the real story of broadcasting.
Tell us about that Christmas broadcast.
The alternator, which he modified and got working for him, he did that in the usual Fessenden way of working day and night continuously, almost continuously, and he must have done, because General Electric delivered this inadequate alternator, which would only produce 10,000 hertz, delivered that in September 1906.
Right.
Well, he was testing this thing between Brant Rock and Plymouth, which is only, 20 miles away or something from Brant Rock. He was testing it already in November of that year. And the transatlantic voice was not intended by Fessenden to be a transatlantic signal, but propagation was extremely good. His antenna was a pretty efficient antenna. It was 420 feet high at Brant Rock. And he was telling the operator at Plymouth how to tune the alternator. And his voice was heard at Macrahanish in Scotland. And he knew that it was heard because he got a transatlantic cable message back from the operator at Brant Rock saying exactly what was said and the time at what it was said. And he, in fact, the quality of the audio was good enough so that he recognized the speaker. So there's no doubt about it. The signal and voice signal had been translated across the Atlantic.
What was the date of that unintentional transmission, and what was the content, if you know it?
Brant, the station between Macrahanish in Scotland and Brant Rock. Brant Rock was set up sometime in the early 1905. And Marconi was claiming super success at transatlantic signaling. So Fessenden, together with his backers, decided that they would like to compete with Marconi. So they decided to set up a station exactly like the one at Brant Rock at Macrahanish in Scotland. That was set up in December of 1905. In January of 1906, signals were heard from Brant Rock. In fact, signals, two-way signals, were finally, early in January 1906, signals were sent, Morse code was sent, the operator at Brant Rock communicating with the operator at Macrahanish in Scotland. In other words, two-way transmission. The operator would send a brief message, would receive a reply back. In other words, back-and-forth conversation. And we know, we have a very good idea that the quality of the transmission was pretty good, because we have a record. Fessenden recorded a record of the night-to-night variation of the signal strength through January 1906. So we can clearly see that he was receiving a reasonable transmission, which could be heard with a pair of earphones on your head. Marconi didn't succeed in having two-way transmission until the fall of 1907. We have no idea the quality of Marconi's transmission. It was said to be two-way at this time, but operators at Brant Rock could hear that they were struggling. In other words, they weren't sending a message and having the message properly received. They were sending and sending and sending and resending the message, sometimes up to six times, and sometimes the message wasn't received at all.
Now, did Fessenden have the sense of competing with Marconi? You just said that they were listening to Marconi's transmissions or attempted transmissions at Brant Rock. Were the two guys really going head-to-head with each other here?
Not really. Marconi was wanting to set up a network of sending signals across the Atlantic, competing with the transatlantic cable. He was a businessman, Marconi. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted Marconigrams, messages sent by Morse code across the Atlantic or around the world, or from ships at sea to shore stations. Fessenden might have got interested in providing a service, but he never did, because, he had a signaling method that was far superior to anything that Marconi ever had.
Tell us about that unintentional transmission. When did that happen? Do you know the precise date, and do you know the content of the message?
All I know is the content of it. Fessenden was telling the operator at Plymouth how to set up his apparatus. In November 1906, on the day in which transmissions were heard, propagation was extremely good. We know that. In fact, it was so good that that when sending Morse code, in other words, keying his transmitter at Brant Rock and keying the transmitter at Macrahanish in Scotland, listening very carefully, Fessenden could hear the direct signal coming from Macrahanish to Brant Rock when they were sending Morse code.
Now, was he hearing the voices in the background? Is that what you're saying? Was he hearing words?
Well, the voice was heard across the Atlantic. That period was a period of time which propagation was extremely good, was the point I was trying to make. We know it was extremely good because Fessenden discovered another thing. He discovered, in fact, that radio signals could be transmitted not only from where they originated to the source, but the other way around the world. He could hear a fifth of a second later. It astonishes me that we know that nowadays with modern equipment, but he could hear the direct signal over the short path as well as the long signal over the long path.
If I understood you properly, then in November 1906, Reginald Fessenden not only inadvertently broadcast across the Atlantic, but in fact realized that such transmission was possible globally because he heard the same signal coming around back to him from the other direction, as it were, having circled the globe.
Yes, that's right. And he reported that. And just like everything else that Fessenden reported in that time frame, people just laughed at him. Nobody believed what he said.
Okay, tell us now, we've come to the crowning event, as it were, of this period of Fessenden's life, about that broadcast in 1906.
Well, it was pre-announced. In other words, by Morse code, he had sent out repeatedly several days earlier, he had sent out to ships at sea to listen on Christmas Eve for a special transmission. And the special transmission was a Christmas program in which started out by Fessenden calling CQ, CQ to all ships. In other words, all ships listen. And then he played the violin, used a phonograph record to transmit some music, and he wished, finally read a few words from the Bible and wished everybody a Merry Christmas and said, listen on New Year's Eve at about the same time, and we'll repeat this transmission. So it was never reported. Fessenden himself probably thought not too much about it, even though he had done it, because broadcast was never heard of in those days. He had the idea only to interest as many ships as he could in buying and installing his equipment on board. He was competing with DeForest, who was essentially trying to do the same thing with inferior equipment, some of it copied from Fessenden circuitry.
Were these ships United Fruit ships or ships of various companies?
I think there was two or three United Fruit Company ships, and there was three U.S. Navy ships that had Fessenden receivers on board. So, in other words, there was a group of people that could have heard the transmissions.
You're listening to Conversations. Today we're talking about Reginald Fessenden with Jack Belrose, a Canadian scientist who has spent the better part of the last 20 years researching this unknown Canadian inventor of radio. We'll be back after station identification.
For a copy of today's program, you can download it at rtscanada.com and click on Conversations. And you can send us your comments to information@rtscanada.com.
Welcome back. We're talking today about Reginald Fessenden with Dr. Jack Belrose.
By 1906, Fessenden was clearly ahead of Marconi. Although the press, a century ago, liked to ridicule Fessenden, there had been a change of view lately. Here at Conversations, we thought we'd like to give you an idea of recent opinion by putting together an audio tapestry of reports on Fessenden from the BBC World Service, CBC Television, the U.S. National Public Radio, and finally, a segment from a radio play, Fessenden's Follies, written by Canadian playwright David Fenario.
On the 100th anniversary of Fessenden giving birth to radio, David Fenario's play, Fessenden's Follies, was broadcast to over 50 community stations across Canada, the United States, and even in Scotland.
Let's listen now to this mosaic of these recent impressions of Fessenden.
Now it's time for Discovery. Richard Hollingham celebrates a very special 100-year anniversary.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Do not, as they say, adjust your set. This is what men aboard ships in the North Atlantic would have heard on Christmas Eve 1906, an experiment conducted by Canadian Reginald A. Fessenden.
Way back in 1896, Marconi transmitted the first message in Morse code.
And then went on to discover the radio.
No, he didn't. I thought so, too. But according to Canadian hero promoter Ray Ireland, it all happened in December the 23rd, 1900, when a Canadian, Reginald Fessenden, sang hymns and said the first words in a radio broadcast. Who was Reginald Fessenden?
Reginald Fessenden was the inventor of radio. It wasn't Marconi.
What we can bring you this transatlantic broadcast link-up is ultimately thanks to technical developments made a century ago by a little-known but hugely important inventor, Reginald Aubrey Fessenden. So in tonight's edition of 20 Minutes, the radio historian Sean Street marks the centenary of the first proper wireless program, which Fessenden broadcast on Christmas Eve 1906, and pays tribute to this unsung hero in Let Distant Lands Converse.
It's quite a small place. It's quite cramped. There's a wooden bench in front of us, and there's a range of equipment on top of it.
It is called the Heterodyne Principle, a poetic-sounding name for a discovery that led to a chain of events culminating in me talking to you right now. Reginald Fessenden made the discovery in the early years of the 20th century. A Canadian by birth, who began his career working for Thomas Edison, Fessenden figured out that by combining two frequencies together, radio could do more than simply transmit Morse code. It would be possible to speak over the airwaves. Thanks to him, radio became a sound medium. It happened 100 years ago. And as writer Dean Olscher explains, the first implementation of Fessenden's principle is one of radio's creation myths.
These are the details passed down to us. Christmas Eve, 1906, not far from Plymouth, Massachusetts. 3 days earlier, Fessenden had notified ships at sea to monitor the airwaves. At the appointed hour, 9 p.m., they heard... Well, it's actually impossible to know exactly what they heard, but it may have sounded something like this.
Who invented radio? Reginald Fessenden. That's who. Radio began in 1906 when Canadian inventor Reginald Fessenden lit up the sky with words and music, long before Marconi. And this December, it's radio's 100th birthday, and you're invited to celebrate with your community radio station. Tune in and hear original radio by dynamic playwright David Fenario. Fessenden's Follies. It's history we never knew. Coming December 23rd for times and stations, visit Fessenden.ca.
Holy Lucretius.
Thiessen! Mr. Thiessen!
He said, and then told me something I already knew.
Frequency above audibility is what we need, but in order to produce the required frequency, we will have to build an alternating current generator powerful enough to create the carrier waves We need to broadcast human voice.
How is that possible?
The amplifiers for increasing the signal strength must be redesigned.
Are you taking this down, Miss Bent?
Yes.
The tuners improved, the interference brought to a higher level of perfection.
Yes.
And see if we can't get this thing sparking the way it should.
But we were already at the maximum rate of rotation that the bearings would tolerate.
Tell me something I don't know, Thiessen.
And we tore that generator apart.
Clunk. Try it again.
And put it together over.
Clunk.
And over.
Clunk.
And over.
Clunk.
Until finally.
Topper there, he gave it a kick. And.
It started to spin. We actually got it spinning.
And spinning.
Right across the Atlantic.
But yes, 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 we can hear you loud and clear in Scotland.
Scotland?
My congratulations, Mr. Fessenden.
Yay! And the boys were strumming as the fiddles went.
1 minute, boys. Wait a minute. I got a telegram here.
What's it say?
C'est quoi, boss?
A telegraph from Mr. Given.
Hello.
And Mr. Walker.
Speaking.
What'd they say, boss?
Well, they said, and I quote,
Mr. Fessenden.
Stop.
We think your system will work.
Stop.
But we do not want it.
Stop.
We would lose much of our investment in cables.
Stop.
If we were to make the change you suggest.
Stop.
Now, if you can invent something.
Stop.
That will prevent all cables from sending more than 4 words a minute.
Stop.
We will continue your contract.
Stop, stop, stop.
In other words, they were asking Fessy to uninvent what he had already invented.
Fessenden was so busy inventing. He was at home in his laboratory, and he was not at home in dealing with the press and with his colleagues. What he wrote up was technically beyond people to understand what he was doing at the time that he was doing it, because nobody believed what he was doing. Everybody, including his colleagues, were merely laughing at him. Fessenden, in the 1906, had first two-way wireless telegraphy transmissions across the Atlantic and the audio transmissions voice later on in that same year. With respect to what Fessenden was doing, sending Morse code telegraphy messages across the Atlantic, the press came out and said, what Fessenden is doing is useless. He's not providing a service. Well, Fessenden was never intending in that time frame to providing a service. He was doing research. That's how the media envisaged what Fessenden was doing at that time.
Is there a recognition in the United States?
There's a group of people that have been promoting in recent years and remembering Fessenden's Christmas Eve broadcast. And in fact, just this last December, I had a conversation with the owner and operator of one of the FM stations in Marshfield, which is not very far from Brant Rock, and he had apparently been remembering what Fessenden had done. The 75th anniversary of Fessenden's Christmas Eve broadcast was remembered. Radio Amateur set up a station at Brant Rock. That's 25 years ago. It was Helen Fessenden after he died, his wife, Helen Fessenden, when she published her book in 1940, that the ordinary world, that is, ordinary people, could read what Fessenden had actually done. And it's really her book that brought about the story about the Christmas Eve broadcast. We didn't hear about the Christmas Eve broadcast until 1932, knowing what Fessenden had actually done. The more I researched Fessenden, the more I realized that what he was doing is the same kind of technology that we use nowadays, except we do it better nowadays with better instrumentation and better techniques. But it's all the same old techniques that Fessenden invented, the continuous waves detector for continuous waves, modulating continuous waves, and so on. 1992, I was asked to present a lecture at McMaster University on Fessenden. an Alexander Graham Bell lecture, which is presented once a year in the fall. Here we're talking about words with wires and words without wires, which Fessenden was trying to do. And I've been researching it ever since. Well, what was really part-time, a part-time study, because I was interested in what Fessenden was doing, has become almost a full-time a full-time occupation, because I have I don't know how many emails every week, and here you are talking to me today about Fessenden.
He seems to have thought about propagating signals by using waves from the time he was a very young kid. There's even an anecdote about him skipping a stone on a lake and thinking about waves represent, not just in water, but perhaps in the air. Indicates a very, very unusual mind, very imaginative mind.
He certainly was imaginative, and since he worked in so many fields, it's just nowadays thinking of that, of what he did, is just almost unbelievable. Yeah, he was having a discussion with his uncle, Cortez Fessenden. It is said that he tossed a stone into the water, and one could see the ripples going out over the water from the where the stone was. And he said, that's what we want, continuous waves, waves from the source spreading out in all directions and received at a distant receiver. A great deal of his thinking went on when he was studying under a mathematics scholarship at Bishop's College in Lenoxville. And he was reading Scientific American and Nature and trying to keep abreast of what was going on in the field of the early development of wireless.
Southern Smile, two-step, played by the Edison Military Band.
That was a Thomas Edison marching band, recorded on one of his earliest inventions conceived while Fessenden was working at the Edison Lab.
Today, we've been listening to a recorded conversation with Jack Belrose about Reginald Fessenden. Conversations is presented by RTS Canada and produced by Hyman Gluestein and Patrick Barnard.
For a copy of today's program, you can download it at rtscanada.com and click on Conversations. And you can send us your comments to information@rtscanada.com. Your comments will be featured on upcoming programs.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time for Conversations.